Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today is December 28th, 2016. We're almost finished with this super painful year. Oh my gosh, it can get worse, and it is going to get worse, so we need to brace ourselves. Today I have the honor of having back on with us Heidi Lambert from No Nukes Northwest. She's an activist and actually kind of a social mover. She works in a bunch of different nonprofit agencies, and I want to invite her, and thank you, Heidi, for joining us. Hello, Heidi. Oh, here we go. Okay, folks, so this seems to be the pattern here every time now. I have our guest on the line before the show starts, and as soon as the bumper music comes on, we're on hold and the call drops. I tend to believe that's a bit of propaganda, fascism. I think it is one of the things that we are, let me see if I can get her back on the line. Hold on just one second, folks. For goodness sakes, this is really uncomfortable, and I really apologize, but I was really excited. We were on the phone. I did warn her because every single interview that I have done in the last week, as soon as the bumper music stops, for goodness sakes. So guess what? I think we're actually really being censored here because I can't call Heidi back. Well, that's a little bit of an interesting twist here. So let me see if I'm going to send her the number so maybe she can give me a call. So I'm going to ask her to call me back. I'm going to ask her to call me back at 718. And anybody that wants to call in when Heidi's on the line, she should be able to answer the phone, and we should be able to get in. So I'm going to send it to her right away. Hold on. So let me try it again. Let me see. I'm going to keep trying to call her. I apologize for this, folks, but this is stuff beyond our control. There's not much we can do about it. Actually, you know what we were planning on talking about was censorship. And it is definitely, let me see if I can give her a call back. So, hold on. She's not calling me back, so I'm going to keep calling her. So, hold on. Sorry about this. There's not much I can do about it. And I do want to keep pursuing to see if I can talk to her. But you know what? When I dial her phone number, the thing stops. So I am going to reconnect with you in just a second. Hold on, just one second. Okay, so let's try it again. I reconnected our phone lines, and let me see if I can give Heidi Lambert a call. We were actually talking about censorship because we know that right now they're gearing up to censor a lot of what's going on in America, and I think that that should do it. Hold on one second. See if she can get through. Let's see if it's calling.
Hello.
It looks. Hi, Heidi. Thank you for calling. Yeah, Heidi.
Hi. Yeah.
Hi. Well, we're on the air. We finally did it. It took me a few minutes. I actually had to hang up. You know what happened, Heidi, is we were talking about censorship. Here we go. This is how it works, folks. You can't get through. I literally remember I did warn you that as soon as we got on the air, we wouldn't be able to talk. Well, that's exactly what happened. And then I could not call you back. The Skype disconnected, and I was not able to call you back. So I had to disconnect from the radio, call the radio show back, and call you back.
Wow. Well, thank you for calling me back. I'm glad I could be back
This
to
is
hear.
how fascism works, folks. People who think that Trump was better than Clinton, you are sorely mistaken. Just wait until he gets his hands on the nuclear industry. And in fact, Heidi and I were talking about that. That's nuclear is one of those key words that if you write that word over the internet, nuclear is one of those things that perks their little heads up. And
Yeah,
you know
trigger
what?
word.
I actually did go while we were talking about this. I actually did click on the link for Homeland Security. So that's how quick it works. Like
Yeah.
I mean, our tax dollars are being used to harm us, period.
Well, we think in our technology that communication and media are going to be faster and more like real time of what's happening. But the computers have these little, triggers where when you say certain words, it triggers. And honestly, social media is like the number one. Emails actually, we think emails used to be private, but the government could always watch our emails. But now, on social media, it's even easier for them. And there is a list of 377 trigger words, and this was back in 2012. So the words probably have changed, and there's probably been added more words to the list. And some of them are obvious, like just names of departments, like the DEA or the Fusion Center. But then there's other words, like you said, nuclear, accident is one of them, deaths, facility, hazmat, chemical spill, toxic, national laboratory. I'm reading it off of the list. Nuclear facility, nuclear threat, cloud, plume, radiation, radioactive, leak, biological infection, chemical burn, biological epidemic, hazardous. I mean, all of these words, if you type these words in social media, it's automatically going to report you. And
Which
that's where you
words
get.
are, say those words again. So you're telling
So,
me if I'm on like Instagram, Twitter,
yeah, and you let's say that you're just talking about your show and you're like, let's talk about nuclear and the chemical spills and the toxic national laboratory. Boom, you've just hit like six of their keywords. And so every time you hit a keyword, it's alarming them, it's alerting them that you are doing these things. So like some Americans, when you have this conversation with them, they'll be like, oh, this is a conspiracy and you're paranoid and la la la. But when the DAPL protests were, going so strong last month, we saw it happen so much. We saw, even myself, my Facebook, I wasn't even in the Dakotas, and my Facebook got blocked. And I got shut down for indefinitely until I could prove my name and prove that my name was mine.
Why
And
did you get blocked? For what reason?
because one of my names is Strange Sky, and someone they then now re Facebook will tell you someone reported you as a false identity, so that makes you feel like it's someone on your friend list. That makes you feel like you pissed off someone on your friend list, but in fact, it has nothing to do with friend list. Somehow, because of my posts or what I say, for whatever times I've said it,
I've triggered their awareness, and I believe that's why they stopped me. And the more I talk to my friends with funny names or people who were even at the protest, they'll tell you that they were blocked as well. I have friends who get blocked so much they have to open other accounts. I have a friend who just got blocked for 30 days because he used the word cracker. And he used the word cracker in the truest sense, that he threw a pack of crackers at some guy. And they blocked him for it. They said that it was a racial slur. And it's amazing to me because this guy actually fights, you know, for Black Lives Matter. And I think he's being targeted as a racist because of his work with Black Lives Matter. And so, you know, again, with this modern-day censorship, it used to be, you know, that there were these seven words that you could never say on the radio or you could never say on TV, and they were cuss words and they were offensive. But then when social media and emails came around, that list grew to, you know, 300 and some words that were going to alert them that you're a threat. And threat is a word, too, actually. So, modern-day censorship. We live amongst modern-day censorship.
Yeah, it is really like 1984. It's really more like Brave New World, where everybody just kind of blindly goes along with it. You know, when you know, you read 1984, there's a certain element of fear among everyone, right? But in Brave New World, it's like everybody just goes along with it. You can't get out of line. That's just the way like yesterday I was on Twitter and this guy made a comment to me like, what do you say? Lunatic anti-nukers like me will one day be considered in the same vein as climate deniers. Brady, that nuclear is the cleanest thing we have.
I think a lot of pro-nuke people think that. And I think that that's true if you don't talk about the waste.
Right.
And that's what I always go back to. You know what I mean? If you can do something useful with the waste, then we can talk nukes. But right now, there's no use. There's no reuse. There's
Heidi, you didn't hear that story? There is a use. They've created diamonds out of nuclear waste. They're still highly radioactive, but they've created diamonds.
Well, I fear for the person who wears that ring. You know? it's a very scary thing. I think the other thing too, which is reminds me of like the 1984, is just how passive it is.
Yeah.
And even the censorship is really passive. Sometimes I will post things and no one will like it, no one will comment. And then when I see my friends, I'll talk to them. I say, "Oh, did you see this post I posted?" And they'll say, "No, I didn't see it." And I go, "That's so interesting. So I wonder if the posts I post, I see them and they're you know, visible to me, but not visible to other people." And we think that, you know, people
other
don't
people
like what we're saying,
right,
or don't agree with us, but in fact, they really just don't see it. It just never populates on their walls. It doesn't go past.
Let's talk about the censorship of the media on anything related to radioactive contamination causing harm. We see dead birds falling out of the sky. Did you see that there was five endangered species released into Hawaii and three of them were found dead? Now, they're not testing them for radioactive contamination, and you're looked at as if you're a lunatic if you even ask. I mean, that is the weirdest part, is we have so much contamination, radioactive contamination all over our country. And there's not one word about the cancer rates in our country skyrocketing because of radioactive waste. Not one word.
Well, I think that the strong arm, the truest strong arm of censorship is social acceptability. So, I mean, when I lived in the Tri-Cities next to Hanford, there's like this rule that you just don't talk about it. You just don't talk about it. And then if you do talk about it, you better be saying nice things because someone's listening or someone will know. You know what I mean? And socially, you don't want to be known as that guy. You know what I mean? You're the one who believes in them. You're the one that believes, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's how that society works there. That's how that community works. Is no one questions.
Kind of like the Stepford Wives, eh?
Yeah, for reals. And I remember so clearly it was like 2003, internet was finally getting a stronghold, and newspapers were going online. And that's like one of my things when I grew up was you got a cup of coffee, and you sat with a paper, and you drank your coffee, and you read your paper. And so with this change, I stopped buying the paper, and I just would read it online. Well, the wonderful thing about reading the paper online is they would leave a comment section at the bottom, and people could comment. And what was even funner about it was you had to register online for the newspaper, but you could say any name, you know. It didn't have to be you, and you could say, you know, crazy lady for art or whatever would be my tag name, you know. And I could say, well, this article is talking about radioactive rabbits. I want to know where were the radioactive rabbits. I live next to Hanford. Do I have to worry about radioactive rabbits, you know? And it was the first time you could have a voice back to the newspaper. And I have to tell you, I took great joy in this. And at the same time, I was so beat down. Like, I was the only person that would ever post constructive criticism of what the articles were saying. And usually people would defend Hanford. And then it evolved where we had Facebook, and then we could share, and then there was lots of more, since Facebook almost diluted it, because at the time, there would be hundreds and hundreds of comments underneath, because everyone would be channeled. If you read this article, you're going to read this one row of comments. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Not where we share it now and it's on our Facebook and a couple people comment. You know what I mean? But anyways, so I think that gave people a voice for the first time. And then what happened was then when it got argumentative or it got too controversial, the newspaper would shut the comments down.
Wow.
And you couldn't comment anymore. And then what I started noticing
was... What would make it controversial?
Well, look, my favorite article was the radioactive rabbit. You know, they say they found radioactive rabbits at the fence lines of Hanford. And, of course, the article was like, we killed it, everything's fine, you know, nothing to worry about. But that validation, I mean, I had been hearing about radioactive animals. I don't want to use the word escaping, because they weren't escaping the Hanford Reservation. You know, imagine a butterfly trying to get through a chain link fence, you know what I mean? They're not escaping, they're just living through that space that they call a reservation, you know? So... my dad would tell stories about people who would leave Hanford from work and then try to go back to Hanford and couldn't get in the gates because they were hotter getting in than they were coming out. And the explanation was because a bird would shit on someone's car or, you know, would poop on a car. There would be radioactive bird poop. Or someone would hit a dog and the dog was radioactive. You know, there was all kinds of stories of how people got waste outside. But this, to me, this article was super modern-day validation that it was still happening, and if it was still happening, that means it could have happened for the last 60 years, you know, a remarkable amount of time. But anyway, so I chose to start commenting on the article. Lots of people, like I said, it got hot really fast. It was like 800 comments, and then I, like, went to go do something, and I came back to my computer, and the whole article was closed down, and comments were closed down. Well, then I... went back to the newspaper, and I saw that the headline for that article, The Radioactive Rabbit Found, had been changed to, I can't remember what they changed it to, but they changed the title of the article so that it would then get refiled in the internet as this new article without all those comments.
Wow.
And it happened repeatedly, Lonnie. It would happen all the time. That was what the newspaper did. When an article got too crazy, they would just take the same article and change the name on it. You know, like Pinnell had success cleaning up Hanford, and that was the radioactive rabbit story, you know?
And well, that's interesting that you talk about it, because I went to newspapers.com while we were talking and just typed in radioactive rabbit. There was a lot of stories, quite a few stories written in 1959 about radioactive rabbits. There were some 1975, but the biggest number that popped up is radioactive rabbit in 1959.
No, but 2004, they're still finding them.
That's right.
So,
2010, there's a story about the radioactive rabbit in Richland, Washington.
crazy, Lonnie. That's crazy to me. Now, so, and so, yeah, so first off, you have to know where to search, you know, have to know what you're searching for. I think that's really weird you would find it from 1950s when you're not finding it for the 2000s. So it's like they validated that it happened in the 50s, but then they fixed it and it wasn't a
Well, I
problem
didn't just
anymore.
Google it. I went to newspapers.com. So
Right?
that's
Well,
a place where you can go to look for it. It costs you money. You can't access everything. It's like $30 a year. I pay for it so I can find, for this reason, because of the censorship, because you'll write a story and boom, you can't find it on Google at all. But you can find it in this historical records. If you know how, again, this is how the new censorship is. They're not totally erasing it. You need to know how to find it.
Yeah, and whereas when the internet first started, you typed in a word, and then that word would auto pop. You know what I mean? Like if you kept typing, like let's say radioactive rabbit, it would show you like the latest times that someone has posted about radioactive rabbits. I mean, I've put in radioactive rabbits in throughout the years, and I would find art, and I would find, you know, different things, you know, that weren't even the article. But then now, and I believe it was 2 years ago, they changed the rules of the internet. They changed that it's not by popularity or by the most used, the things that get populated. And that's why when you go to Google, the first page is mostly ads. People pay to have their posts or their articles or their things put to the top. So again, the internet is the censorship is really driven by money.
Wow.
And it's also driven by the people's passiveness because we let this stuff happen. We let it happen. And so that's where we think that the internet is this trusted source, but it's not. And another thing I wanted to bring up too was about the social censorship, about how there's certain things we just don't accept from each other to talk about, and how that influences people's profession. And Facebook is another example of that. They tell kids in high school, you know, be careful what you post, be careful what you know, your image is being displayed for the world, and employers will see it and they won't hire you.
Yeah,
Well, I have
I've
a
heard
really good
that.
friend who's a teacher, and she got head lice, and that's something that happens quite a bit to teachers. And so she wrote on Facebook, she posted, and she said, you know, OMG, I got head lice again, dang it, you know. That's what I get for hugging the kids, I think is what she said. And the next day she was called into the office at the principal's office, and she was told that she had to take that post down, that that was upsetting to parents to see that she had head lice.
Wow.
You
Wow.
know, but that's her on. But so imagine if a teacher gets in trouble for talking about head lice, how is someone at Hanford or in the nuke business or any just living there, you know? If you're just going to live in Hanford and you're going to be a teacher or a doctor or a landscaper and you have an opinion and you can't share it on Facebook in fear that someone who might be your customer will see it and then not buy your services, that's censorship. It's a very social, passive form of censorship.
This is so, it's really, and it's been going on for such a long time. It's kind of ingrained in people. You don't even question it. That's why people don't question it. It's like they don't have to lie to us because no one cares. I mean, that's the weird part. I mean, they don't.
We're afraid to care, and we're afraid to trust each other. I mean, it's just like you know, you saying that someone tweeted you that you are like mythical. Your statements about, you know, radiation are mythical. They're not even real, you know, like the climate change. I'd like to see that person go walk through Hanford, you know. I feel like the people who tell me that radiation isn't harmful, or that we exaggerate the harm of radiation. It's like, dude, go live at Hanford. I invite you. Go in the fence line and go farm there and go live there. Because if you don't think it's harmful and you think it's safe and you expect the birds to fly through it and the animals, the fish, and everyone else to live through there, you go live there. You know, And Rick Perry, he should go and eat some freaking jam, you know, that was made from the berries that grow at Hanford. If you agree with nukes and you think it's a solution, then you need to start eating the food that's grown there, breathing the air that comes out of those filters, and drinking the water that comes out of the coolers. Because if you think it's safe, then you need to consume it. I don't think it's safe, and I don't think that I should have to consume it.
Well, this is their argument. All those people that live in Richland, they're fine. They're perfectly fine. They live their lives. They have no problem living. And what they don't talk about is the long... See, Helen Caldicott talks about this. The incubation rate for radioactive contamination is 4 to 80 years, 80. So... Like a friend of mine that I met in school, she grew up near Hanford. She had a hole in her heart, which is a common birth defect among children exposed to radioactive contamination. And I said, you know, I said, well, that's obviously caused by Hanford. She's like, well, my doctor never said that. But that same person now as an adult cannot have children. She's sterile.
Right.
So well, has she been affected by radioactive contamination all of her life? You know, the doctors tell her it's an anomaly, that she should be able to have kids, but there's no reason why. She's just one of those unlucky people. That's censorship.
It is censorship, and it's heavy, Lonnie, because I mean that censorship kind of starts in medical school. You know, that censorship's even deeper, where people go to get educations. And, you know, if you're a doctor and you go to school, and let's say like you had a family member who died of cancer. And so you want to be a doctor and you want to cure cancer and you're passionate about it because you lost someone you loved to cancer. And so you go to school for it and then they teach you how to use chemotherapy and radiation and they say this is how we're going to cure cancer. You believe it because you want that outcome so bad. And then you go into Tri-Cities who has a huge cancer rate. They have one of the biggest cancer centers in the U.S., and you know, and the cancer does touch people's lives there. Lots of illnesses. Quite honestly, when I lived there, everybody was sick from something, either from something they were born with or a genetic problem or it was a disease or it was an allergy. I mean, it was a very sick community there, and there was a lot of loss there. But when you go back to censorship, you don't talk about it. You don't blame things. The social norm is that people get sick and die, and it happens everywhere. And it is happening everywhere. And so you don't feel like it's unique to that area. You don't feel like it's unique to your life. You feel like it's the norm. And then there's some sort of shame about being sick. There's a social shame and a social shame of dying, honestly. People don't want to admit that they have cancer, and they certainly don't want to admit responsibility, you know. When you have cancer right now, it's just kind of like you were a victim of something and we don't know what it is, and we all kind of have empathy for this person that has this disease. But
well,
we don't sit and talk about like, oh, well, I think maybe you have thyroid cancer because of Fukushima. You know what I mean? And maybe it's not your fault. Maybe it's because of the air you breathe. You know, maybe that day you were on the beach when Fukushima happened. Or, you know, like you're saying, it's so hard to pin back to when it happened that we don't do it. And we socially are acceptable to just not talk about it. You know, that you got sick. We're sorry you're sick. Well, then you're spending your energy trying to get better. You don't have energy to fight or to talk about it, you know, and you feel shame because you're sick. And that's what it is in Tri-Cities. It's that they censor out people with shame and there's no discussion. If you're a professional, you don't have an opinion. You're not allowed to have an opinion on it. And you just don't talk about it. And everybody goes to work and everyone just goes on like everything's fine. And that's where we come to the 1984 reality, that they're watching us, they're listening to us. And people who are making noise, they start taking away their voices. And the easiest way to take away a voice is to block their Facebook page or slow their posts. So when someone says, you know, there's a riot happening on such and such street, people might not see it for 24 hours or 48 hours after they posted it.
It's really Orwellian. It's like it's so incomprehensible that this is the state of our country right now. There is now a new state law. A state senator in Washington is proposing, and actually, it's part of the Homegrown Terrorist Act that protesters are going to be charged with economic terrorism. So.
This, and sadly, Lonnie, this isn't new. This stuff is not new. I mean, when Occupy happened in 2012, they charged the protesters for the damage of the park, that there was no lawn because there were so many people with tents, excuse me, there were so many people in tents in the park. It killed the lawn. And so they started ticketing the protesters for damaging the park. And it's kind of funny because just the other day before yesterday, I was in Portland. And I was looking at that park, and there's still no grass growing there. There's just no grass growing there. It doesn't grow there. The way the trees are and the tall buildings, there's no light there. But yet they blamed it. I mean, here we're like 5 years later, and they're still blaming that there's no lawn there because of the protests, you know? And it's just what the water protectors at DAPL, they're charging them for going into town and getting supplies. It's just backwards. It's just unbelievable that they can get away with that. And we have to, when those people go to court, that gets thrown out. They're
It's
not going
all
to live
just
with those.
intimidation.
Yeah, it's totally intimidation. It totally is intimidation. And censorship, it's been going on since World War II, for sure. Book banning is another example. My kids wanted, they love this book called Divergent, and there's three of them in the series. And my kids, they're teenagers, they just read them over and over and over again. So for Christmas, I said, I'm gonna get this movie, and we'll all watch it. I had read some of this book, but I hadn't read all of the book. But I kind of knew what it was about, and it's modern and fantasy. So we watched the movie, and in the movie, I'm starting to realize like this is like a Hunger Games kind of book, and this is about people being smart and thinking and fighting the system. And I said to my daughters, I said, I cannot believe that they have this in your school library. And they said, oh yeah, everybody loves this book. Why wouldn't they, want kids to read this book? I love to read this book. So I Googled Divergent banned book, and it came up that it was banned in 23 states.
Wow.
And it's
Wow.
just, yeah, so it's like that's not new. That's something that we've been living in for, since the witches, It's like a witch hunt. We really haven't evolved or grown at all when it comes to going against the social norms and speaking the truths that we know and accepting people's truths. And as far as the government goes, they say they have to watch us and they have to look for these words for our safety. But again, who are they saving us from? Are they saving the people from the corporations? Are they saving the
Well,
corporations from the people?
this law about what they're calling it economic protesters, it comes on the back of the protests against Trump that happened, especially in Portland. I think that freaked people out. But, because we live here and my daughter lives in Portland, I can tell you my daughter was there. She left. She said the cops rolled up looking for a fight. So they instigated it, So it's not like people were just spontaneously violent.
No, my kids. We actually had this conversation last night about anarchy, and my kids said, "Well, maybe we need anarchy. Anarchy sounds like a solution, And my husband was saying, "No, the government is good. We need help from each other, and the idea of the government is to keep control and make sure we have roads and infrastructure." And he said, "Police." And the kids said, "Yeah, but down with the police," which I thought was hilarious. My kids' opinions, sure, so strong at 13. But yeah, you think about it, and you're like, "Well, we need police. Police are a good thing when they're protecting you, but when they're militarized and they're not protecting you, they're protecting the machines. Then that's when they're not helpful." And that's where I'm at with our government. Is our government for the American people? Are we really protecting ourselves? Are we just doing what we do because the government tells us to be afraid and just hands our power to the government, trusting that they're taking care of us? Because that's how I feel. I feel like we're just supposed to think that Washington, D.C. can make all these decisions and relationships and guide our country through the future. And I don't really believe that. I don't believe that's what I believe that we have to work on our streets and in our towns, and what we do in our states guides what Washington, D.C. does. Not that D.C. helps us. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't believe the president leads us. I believe that we lead the president. The president's supposed to work for the American people, not the American people work for the president.
And well, look, that's based on an old idea that we have democracy, or that we're really a real republic, but we're not. Right now, we are a true banana republic. That's really what we are. We are. I mean, this law that they're talking about, and it's in on the Hill. You can go to thehill.com and read about it. It specifically says it's aimed at protests specifically in the Pacific Northwest because of environmental activists that shut down commerce and transportation. In Washington last year, they shut down the railroad tracks to stop a shipment used for fracking. So people were on the railroad tracks up in Olympia, Washington, and said, no, we're not going to let this pass. Those people, if this bill passes, could be charged with, a $10,000 fine and 5 years in jail.
So Olympia, the protests in Olympia are so close to my heart. Those people, those kids, quite honestly, they're mostly kids. They're all in their 20s, mostly. They're students at Evergreen State College, which I'm alumni to. They're dedicated. They were dedicated 15 years ago when I went to school there. They believe in peace, and they believe in democracy, and they believe in calling it out. And, I mean, the port of Olympia has there's Tacoma right next to Olympia, which is a huge military base. And so when we went overseas to the Middle East, we would ship Stryker Brigade, like entire boats full of tanks out of that port. And people lived at that port, and were there. I mean, there is a social network of resistance that's no joke. That's no joke. In Olympia and in Portland, I have always been impressed with how efficient and productive the people are there. And I'll tell you why. It's because they know each other. It's because they sit and have dinner with each other, and because they relate to one another, and they're people. You know, it's not some... It's not just an idea and someone says, oh, let's go to the port, you know. And when you were talking, Lonnie, I was thinking about the DAPL. That stopped in Portland. That was in Oregon. It was in Salem that the engineers, the Army Corps of Engineers, shut down the permit. That happened in Salem, Oregon.
Wow.
So that's where I'm going back to, that we can make major changes just in our own neighborhood. And when you look around, and maybe we're lucky in Oregon, I don't know, but we're in a place where when people hear something they don't agree to, they resist it. And they get together, they carpool, they go to Salem, they go to that office, and
it's
they
true.
Sit there.
That's
yeah.
true. And they don't back down. They don't back down until our legislators listen. That's actually but you know what? Again, this is about social engineering.
But they get arrested. That's the other thing, is they take those tickets and they get arrested. And, you know, there's a group, you and I are in, nonukesnorthwest.org, and we were talking about what do we want to raise money for? What do we need money for our organization? And we all decided we needed it for legal defense.
Yeah.
That was a worthy cause to us, is let's raise money just so we can support each other in our actions and we can get those tickets. And it doesn't stop us. You know, and that's the thing, is that they can keep ticketing us and they can keep trying to take money. I mean, that's another form of censorship. It's an economic censorship. They make it too expensive or too hard. You know, like North Dakota is a fine example. Who would have thought that thousands of freaking people would go in the winter in the snow and sleep in their cars and tents to protest?
Well, who would have thought that the police would block the main road to keep people from getting medical aid?
Well, they do it all the time. They do those kind of things in Portland. That's a tactic they've used for a long time, is to shut down the medical and then blame the protesters and say, oh, well, it's your own fault. You blocked the road. We couldn't get through. But they blocked the road, and we all know that. And they will get sued. I'm sure there's that young woman who lost her arm. I'm hoping she sues them. And she, you know, sadly, our justice system supports protesters. It's really true. I mean, a lot of people... They get supported. It's turning against the government. The more they martyrize or make these protesters bad people, the more that the protesters support them and believe in them, because it just proves they're valid, that they're real people, they're genuine.
Well, I would say this, Heidi. Think about what happened with the Occupy movement. The Occupy movement, the reason that they squashed it right away was because they did not want people getting actively engaged. I mean, the Occupy movement was spontaneous. People had had enough. And it was happening everywhere across the country. Every little city had an Occupy.
It happened across the world, Lonnie. It started with the Egyptian Spring, you know. And that's the thing. The Egyptians revolted, and it started this revolt, and then they used social media. They got into social media, and they were able to say, meet at the square right now. And people got that, and they got there right then. So when Occupy started, that's when I started noticing the delay of posts. If you said, meet me, I'm downtown, you know, meet me on Burnside, you wouldn't see that post for another day. Or people will say, we're gathering, they'll show pictures of thousands of people. You wouldn't see that in your feed.
Yeah, but now, you see, it's kind of like there's a huge, it's really kind of, the censorship goes hand in hand with the propaganda and the social engineering. Like right now, there's such a negative, I mean, I cannot believe people in this country have this negative opinion of Black Lives Matter, as if, you know, it's being funded by George Soros, as if black people being shot by cops is not an issue in this country.
But well, I wish that George Soros would fund Teresa. Teresa Rifford deserves to get money for her work. You know what I mean? But that's the part that gets me so angry, to people who say that protesters get paid. Nobody's making money here, guys. You know? Teresa doesn't make no money. The poor woman sleeps on the stairs of City Hall. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't take any money to say no. It just doesn't. It doesn't take money to say no. The only reason we need money would be for our defenses. And even then, most of the tickets and the charges get dropped because they're bogus. But the fact that people say that this is that there's a leader and that there's someone who's paying for this, I mean, that's just ignorance. It's just ignorance to me. It's them not understanding that the United States is the poster child of democracy. And in the last 10 years, we have become like a Hollywood star, where, you know, America is just addicted and malnourished and sick and corrupt, contaminated, maybe is even a better word. And the whole world can see that. It can see it. It's just like a Christmas dinner party when your one relative comes who's been, you know, a heroin addict for a decade, and you say you're clean and everyone knows you're not. That's what's going on with America. America's telling the world that we know what we're doing and we have democracy, and the whole world knows. They're looking at us, they're saying, you're not a democracy, you're corrupt. You're a world industrial complex, and people are going to start figuring it out, you know?
Yeah, well, this election showed everybody that we don't even have half of a vote. I mean, it got, you know, like the whole thing from start to finish was nothing but a corrupted election cycle. And so when people say, well, you have to accept it, Trump won. No, Trump did not actually win, because the recount in Michigan was shut down when they found the extra 72,000 votes. So really, that's a ridiculous statement to say that. And then the whole idea, I'm finding it completely incomprehensible. Talk about censorship and suppression. I find it incomprehensible that we've moved on from saying that it's perfectly okay for Donald Trump not to be going to these national security briefings and becoming prepared to become president of the United States. That to me is the most frightening thing of all of his behavior. And yet, if you say anything about it, the censorship on that is like, people self-censor. People in our society, we don't need the social media to censor us, because we have people out there just automatically censoring us, telling us that we're out of line and we need to get behind the president.
Right.
It's incomprehensible.
Well, I think that they're all part of the the cloud, you know what I mean? There's a lot of people who want to believe that everything is okay, and everything's, I mean, I think that's honestly what the problem is the rate of denial, the amount of denial. I think that, you know, when you think of, like, I was sitting here thinking about propaganda and censorship and the elections and how you're talking about these elections, and, like, I honestly lost faith in the elections when I was really young. I mean, the 2000 elections with Bush and Gore, it was the same scene where he won the popular vote, but Bush got the electoral vote, and I felt through that whole Bush era that people were getting screwed over, you know. But that's only in my lifetime that I can remember. I'm sure if we talk to people who are even older than me, say 20 years, they might talk about Nixon and the injustices of Nixon or Reagan. Like, I don't even remember, did people really vote for Reagan? You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that we just, as a society this year, we're like, oh, we're going to believe, you know, that this works. I mean, I'll even go backwards to Obama. Like, I loved that we had a black president. I loved Obama. I loved Michelle Obama. But the truth is, Obama came from Illinois, and Illinois state has the most private commercial reactors than anywhere else in the world. Do you think he got money from them? I think he got money from them. Do you think
they actually put him in office. I think they targeted him. I think they found him, put him in office. But this is all how censorship works, because censorship and propaganda go hand in hand. It's like this latest report. Did you see this report by the GOP, the intimidation at the Energy Department? It's a kind of a big story. It was out there. That lady that got fired, there was a woman at the House Science Committee was investigating the DOE's low-dose radiation research program. And they actually got, basically the DOE refused to submit information. And one of the, let me see, what's her name? They don't tell us her name in this article, but I forget it's, anyways. There was a scientist who worked for the DOE program who got fired. When her bosses thought she lobbied in support of, you know, she was lobbying in support of radiation research. Instead of providing scientific information that the Congress was doing, all they did was block, retaliate, lobbied, hide information. They did nothing but lie straight up to our own Congress. Now, how is that not illegal? That's what I don't get. This is what I do not understand, how the DOE can continue to lie to our elected officials about the exposure to the low-level radiation limits.
Right. So, well, they just changed the limits. They just changed the form of measurement, you know, which changes the names and everything, or actually moved the limit up.
Well, speaking, this is what this article says. The Obama administration sought to wind down a program started in the 1990s to study biological effects, including potential cancer, of exposure to low-dose radiation and from nuclear accidents. And at the same time, the administration is increasing resources for programs studying alternative energy. So the Congress was investigating, why are we turning this down? And it turns out that this woman was actually fired. They fired her for providing honest, complete information to the Committee on Science.
Right.
So
right. That goes back to the whole whistleblowing, that what you would think would be heroes become criminals.
That's censorship at the biggest. That's censorship at the highest level.
Right. Yeah. That's someone who's trying to inform people. There's so many scientists, right, that have lost their jobs. There's so many people who've lost their jobs trying to speak the truth. And as a whole of a society, we accept that they get shut down, or they get told, they get fired. They get fired and they disappear.
Her name was Medding, Dr. Medding. That was her name. METTING. You can look it up, but you know what? I think this is what it's going to take is for people willing to be willing to get fired, and to walk away and to say we're not participating in the propaganda. We're not going to participate in the censorship. I
Well,
mean.
there's like Walt Talk. I always say his name badly. Tarismaki Tazaki. He was a whistleblower at Hanford, and he was one of the main scientists to do the vitrification plant. And the vitrification plant was the plant. It's a French system where they pull the waste out of the tanks and can heat it up to where it turns solid into glass. And then when it's solid radioactive glass, they could bury it, but then it won't leak, and it's considered more solid in the solid form than liquid. And they pay billions and billions of dollars. This is we're like a good 25, 30 years into this plant. And Walt was the one who spoke out, who said, "This is really dangerous. What we're doing right now is never going to work." And they didn't fire him, but they demoted him to like file papers in the basement, of the national laboratory. And he fought it. He got a lawyer. He finally won. It took like 5 years. And
Tomasitis,
luckily,
that's his name.
pardon?
Walter Tomasitis.
Yes, thank you. And an amazing man. And I got to have a conversation with him once. And I asked him. I said, "What is this about the tanks that you're so against?" And he said, he explained it so well. He said, when they were making nuclear waste at Hanford, they had no idea what they were doing. It was super top secret. People would throw things in trenches and throw things in tanks, and nothing was ever recorded. He said there is not 1 gallon of waste out of the 56 million gallons of waste there, not 1 gallon that is the same as the other. And that you can't pipe it. If you were to do a vitrification plant, it's because the waste is the same consistency from the same place, and usually even from the same time. But ours is 60 years of time, different stuff, different metals added, different things. He said there's no way you're going to be able to pipe it out of those tanks and run it through a pipe and not have explosions. And because he said that, they demoted him. They tried to fire him. But it was true. And now it's true. And now I can tell you they're changing their plans, because ultimately it's not good business to blow up a whole half of a state. You know, I mean, they don't want it to happen either. They don't want to have a gigantic explosion. Luckily, they just have a lot of little leaks and a lot of, spills, but nothing explosion. Not yet, anyways.
Well, on their website, they basically say that over 1 million gallons have already leaked in the past. It's a
Oh,
very
yeah.
vague statement. Oh, at least over 1 million gallons of. I mean, this is the point here, though, when we're talking about censorship and propaganda. They don't really have to censor us because nobody looks. Nobody cares. People get intimidated. They will stay home. They won't go out to protest. They won't call their elected officials because they're intimidated. They're afraid of being searched out and looked at.
Yeah, it's a self-censorship. We're self-censored. Exactly. Because we're afraid of losing our jobs. We're afraid of losing our friends. There's probably even people who are afraid to talk about it with their families, And if you can't have a conversation, then that's censorship. It's the communication and the conversation that gets people to think and further their ideas. And without that conversation, then you're just a potato.
You're just a potato. Well, look, you know what? This is the thing about this whole thing about censorship. So I think that we need to just forge ahead and not like I don't, although I do have to say I am very careful about where I look on the internet, because really honestly, like my friend Ed Oz, who's been on the show, he talks about the Disney. His big thing is about how Disney sold us the friendly Adam, right? So we've talked about that on the air here a few times. He connects through the internet with people all over the world, Pakistan, China, the Middle East. He frequently has computer problems, frequently.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I do not think that it's disconnected. I think this is the thing. what happened to him one night was all of a sudden he was on a website. I forget which website it was, but he was on a website that wasn't like government approved. And all of a sudden his computer went down. So he went to his backup. All of his backup information was taken down too. He had two
Right.
backups. All of his backup information was absorbed. So he had to start from all over and recreate. He did have some things on a backup drive that was not connected to his computer. And he was able to reinstall some of that. It is really bizarre how they are willing to take action and be punitive with anyone. It's not, you don't have to be out in the public eye. You don't have to be actively engaged. The punitiveness and the completeness of this technology is they can just target anybody that they want right now.
Sure, and it makes it complicated. And one of the ways too, like with the protesting on social media, the other fantastic invention that they have is trolls. And again, trolls sometimes are real people, and they're just fighting for their social beliefs and justice of censorship, and they're trying to shut you down. One time, we had a guy who posted on No Nukes Northwest on our Facebook page all the time about how our facts were wrong and how nukes were safe and this was wrong, and he would correct us. Finally, we're like, "Who are you?" And he's like, "Well, I work for the public health department." And it was like, "Well, duh, dude, you get paid from them, so of course you're buying into it and spitting out what you know." But he was such an exhausting troll. It took so much time to argue with him, and eventually, between the administrators, they wanted to ban him. Well, I'm against banning. I don't like censorship. So I was like, no, let him stay, and people will see him for what he is. But after like a year of arguing with this guy, it came back to the table, and we decided to go ahead. Well, you know what? We reported him. He got reported. I know I hate to say that, but he got to the point where he was harassing certain members. Not only on social media, but in their personal lives. He became like a stalker. But I so you have your freaks in our society, but then there are corporations that hire people to stalk people online too, and just harass them. And it gets to be exhausting, and it gets to be to the point where you just feel like not turning on your computer, and then you just stop talking about it.
I think we're going to see a mass exodus in this country like they did in Germany. I think that that's what's going to happen, frankly. I think there's going to be a lot of people leaving the country and leaving the Northern Hemisphere, as a matter of fact, because it's not just the USA. It's also a Great Britain and France. I mean, they are passing a lot of censorship laws right now. This whole, it is really about the war state, and this is why they don't talk to us about the harm that nuclear contamination causes. Because if they really did, it's like I told Thomas Ackerman, if doctors were really informed about the harm about nuclear pollution, they would be jumping up and down. They have to brainwash them the hardest.
Yeah.
And the censorship is really hard. You cannot talk to a doctor and say, I want to have my blood tested. I want to see where I'm at. You can't get that done.
Right.
So,
Well, and then they
Heidi, guess what?
also.
This hour has gone by very, very quickly. We're at 8:58 right now. We have 45 seconds left. So I want to thank you for joining us. Really, it's
Yeah.
really stimulating conversation. I hope you'll come back and we can actually share more of this conversation, and I'd really like to get into what's going on at Hanford, because as we know, CGS was closed down and opened up, but that will have to wait for another day. So thank you for joining
Okay.
us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for doing what you do, Lonnie. Get the truth out.
Yeah, well, it's, I do tell people, share this station, share the link, www.ucy.tv/AOF. Put your courage feet on, take action. Call those elected officials and really do take action. Your voice matters. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Content Media Radio with LaVon